It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. The city of Superior is at the heart of a new collection of short stories by a Wisconsin author with a lifelong bond with the community. Anthony Bukowski was born there and has lived most of his life there. He's written a number of short story collections. His latest follows characters, many of them Polish-American, as they seek connection and community in Superior and beyond. Anthony Bukowski is a professor emeritus at UW-Superior. His new book is called The Thief of Words. Tony, thanks a lot for joining us.
Well, thank you, Rob.
Now, reading the book, I realize I don't see a lot of books with Polish-American people in places like Superior and Louisiana in the post-World War II era. What drew you to their stories? And I'm guessing it's part of partly your own background.
Well, it is, Rob. My grandparents on both sides came from the old country, and I'm old enough that I can remember them. They were alive when I was young. I was very young, but I do remember them. And I went to a Polish church. It's now been razed, so we can't attend St. Adalbert's Church anymore. But this is very much a part of my life, my upbringing. I went to a Polish Catholic grade school, St. Adalbert's, in the east end of Superior. And it's informed my life and improved it, I think, and gave me some foundation, some place, some culture to which I can belong.
Staying with that Polish-American background for a moment, one thing that comes up in a couple of the stories is, you know, the Polish fraternal groups, the churches. Well, they're less and less Polish over time. Fewer people are participating in these groups. And I remember my own upbringing, going to weddings at the Polish Farmers Hall. Well, that's not there anymore in my own hometown. That sense that some of that identity is fading over time.
Well, it's fading for sure, Rob. Some years ago, the bishop here in Superior closed three of our ethnic parishes. There was a Slovak parish, St. Cyril and Methodius, and two Polish parishes, St. Stanislaus and my own, St. Adalbert's, but they're gone. And as I said, our St. Adalbert's grade school is gone, so too is St. Stanislaus. Our Polish club has really dwindled in its numbers. I was the president once. The club was founded in 1928, and I remember even 25 years ago when it was a larger Polish club. But now we have about 12 members attend during our monthly meetings. But there's something about us that just won't quit. People with the wonderful names like Dombrowski and Nowoszynski and Zuchowski, we're still there, and the old ones are in our memories.
Superior, the community, is a character almost, bringing the different stories in this book together. Can you talk about how you bring Superior and have this the sense of place, this flavor?
Well, you know, Rob, I desire no place but Superior. I wanted to live here, and my wife and I had gone away sometimes. We lived in most beautiful places, Lexington, Massachusetts. We lived in Natchitoches, Louisiana, which is a gorgeous town, and which appears in this book of stories. But always my heart longed to return to my home. I couldn't be happy anywhere else.
And you mentioned Louisiana. Your stories take place in this book a lot in Superior, but also New Orleans and elsewhere in Louisiana. And that, it sounds like, came from some of your historical research as well. A lot of Polish people coming to the United States, especially resettled after World War II, came into basically sort of work camps, resettlement camps in Louisiana. Can you share some of that story?
I don't think American readers know much about, well, you mentioned this earlier in your introduction about Polish-American culture. The one thing I doubt most Americans know is that a number of Poles came in after World War II under the Displaced Persons Act and then the Louisiana Resettlement Act, and they ended up coming through New Orleans as the port of entry and working in the cane fields of Louisiana. And my wife and I lived in Natchitoches, Louisiana, and taught, and I've been down to the cane harvest before, and there are still some remnants of that Polish culture there. But a lot of the people moved out of the working in the cane fields because it was just such demanding work. And so some remained in Louisiana to this day, but others left when various concerns they had were raised, and the government under Harry Truman looked into these concerns. And the displaced persons were then often sent to Michigan or Wisconsin or New York or other northern places, although some did stay contentedly.
We're talking to author Anthony Bukowski from Superior. His latest book is The Thief of Words. Another piece of New Orleans that comes through, Tennessee Williams. So you directly reference him in some of the stories. The author, one of the main characters, thinks of herself as a character in a Tennessee Williams story in many ways. And you acknowledge Tennessee Williams in your acknowledgments at the end of the book. What does Tennessee Williams mean to you as you're writing stories like these?
Oh, Rob, how I wish I could tell you what is in my heart regarding such great authors as William Faulkner, Flannery O'Connor, Tennessee Williams. Tennessee Williams has inspired me for years. Even before I read plays, I would see the names of his plays that had been made into movies. They ring with such poetry, and I fell in love with those titles, and I fell in love with Tennessee Williams' fictions and dramas. And he has been a great part in my life, and I have had the opportunity now to write about Louisiana and to write about Mr. Tennessee Williams. And that is something I had intended to do and hope to do, and now I have done it.
You just listed a bunch of authors very much thought of as Southern regional authors. What is it about them that speaks to, a kid from Superior?
I think extremes, maybe, Rob. I've thought about this and I just don't know. One famous writer had said, when asked about William Faulkner, what was it he liked? That author said, the heat and the dust. Well, I think the heat and the dust appeal to me too, but I also think it's a matter of extremes. Whereas I grew up and now reside in my hometown in the north, right on the hard on the edge of Lake Superior, and the cold climate we suffer here, there is the extreme at the other end. It's almost 1,000 miles straight down from here to New Orleans. So it's the extremes at either end that I think appeal to me.
Now, from some of the pop culture references, including the Elvis movie King Creole, I'm putting in my mind a lot of these stories in the late 1950s or early 1960s. And this is a time that often gets treated as with nostalgia, right? When people in the United States talk about the good old days, they might think around that time. You don't, I feel like, treat this particularly nostalgically. Many of the people are adrift and unhappy. What are your thoughts on our nostalgia toward that era and the stories you tell of it?
Well, I think partly I write about these things because I wasn't allowed to see too many movies. My father was strict, and he followed the Catholic Legion of Decency list, where as a boy, I could only see movies that were morally unobjectionable for all. And yet I wanted, as most curious young people do, to learn about another side of life. I couldn't see on screen, but I'd hear my friends talk about Elvis as King Creole, for instance, a rebel in New Orleans. These characters I found so appealing, and so I have had the opportunity to imagine them for myself. And the King plays a big part in this, as do Jerry Lee Lewis and Gene Vincent. And Chuck Berry and others from that period. And it's a chance for me to imagine what I could not experience as a boy. I couldn't see the movies. When I'd look at James Dean on the lobby card at the movie house, but I couldn't go in because my father wouldn't permit me to see something like East of Eden. I can reimagine that now. And I can reimagine, as I say, Elvis as Danny Fisher in King Creole. Or Elvis in Loving You, or Elvis in Jailhouse Rock. And it also helps me to write about the 50s and those great rock singers.
Now, from the title story, The Thief of Words, it's told from the perspective of a boy growing into a young man, and his views of his father. And I've read some of your biography. A lot of the details overlap there. Working at, I think, at the King Midas flower plant, the father in the story, and I believe your dad, if I have that right. Can you talk a little bit about the story of the thief of words and how it fits in, how it draws from your own life?
Rob, we're recording this interview at the home of my friend Tom Johnson. We're about a quarter mile from the flour mill. It's not King Midas anymore. I don't even know what they do down there anymore. But my father quit sailing on the Great Lakes, quit sailing as a merchant seaman. He came home to work in the flour mill. My sister had been born, and I was born 3 years later. And that's what he did. He walked sometimes 7 days a week down the tracks, under the viaduct, beside the ravine, past the oil dock, on into to the flour mill, which was a terrible, noisy, dangerous place. He did it day after day after day, and he rarely took the car to work, though it was a quarter mile walk, if not more. He rarely took the car because he didn't want to get it dirty. So there he was. And then the poor guy takes his lunch bucket and comes home after work and has a beer and maybe a beer and a bump, a beer and a shot. And then he plays the accordion in the evening. What a difficult and demanding life. And yet he endured. He endured. And he was sometimes difficult to my sister Mary and to me. And he is in the story. In the story, he robs the children when they want to talk and tell their father at supper about what has happened in their lives during the day. He starts telling his own stories and, in a sense, robs them of the chance to tell their stories. And the boy in the story resents this. But then later in life, when the father has died now, the boy goes back to that way that the father would go to the flour mill. And after a rainy night, a stormy night, when the fog comes in and it is warm in the spring, the creek is running high, he, the boy, remembers his father. And in doing so, he calls out his name, "Father, Father," in two languages. The one language, he's calling Father, and in Polish, he's saying "Ojciec."
A line from The Thief of Words, quoting here, "I don't hate my old man. He's like he is for a reason. He never got to be what he wanted." The charity, I guess, the grace that that he ends with really struck me. That and that scene you just mentioned, as he remembers his father and calls out to him in English and Polish, is that something that you experienced in your own life? That realization.
I'm trying to, Rob. I keep asking my father's forgiveness, though he's been gone since 1985. I pray for that forgiveness. And on the other hand, you know, I hold certain grudges. But who doesn't have grudges toward their parents? But I'll tell you what, Rob, my father, he had more strength than I have ever had, psychologically, physically, probably emotionally. I haven't one-tenth of the strength that he had. And here he worked all of those years. So there is so much to admire. And I'm glad that I could express this kind of confession in the book.
And finally, Tony, your characters, a lot of them seem to be trying to find a home, a geographical home, a home among other people. You were born in Superior, you returned there, and you've said that is the place for you. What is it that makes Superior your home above all others?
Well, I tell you, Rob, it's the smell of the oil refinery. Nothing like living a 25 or 30 years smelling hydrogen sulfide when the wind comes out of the south. We had the only oil refinery in the state of Wisconsin. You can hear also, to someone aware of these things and in love with these things, you can hear boats in the harbor. You can sometimes smell when there is a strong northeast, northwest, north wind off of Lake Superior. You can, I swear, you can smell fish from the lake as far inland as a mile away. All of these markers, sensual markers, actual physical markers, the viaduct, the creek, all of these things appeal to me. And they, I know when things will bloom. I know when the lilacs will come out later than other places in the state of Wisconsin. I know that the peonies will follow them. Gee, there's so much to say about this place and so much to love about it. And that's what I have tried to do, Rob, for eight through eight books. I've continued this thing, and it never leaves me. I always find new material.
Tony, thanks so much for sharing Superior with us.
You're great, Rob. Thank you.
Anthony Bukowski is the author of many short story collections. His newest one is The Thief of Words. He was born in Superior and is professor emeritus at UW-Superior.